I weigh like 7 stone. So for me to, I mean, I'm like 5'3", 5'4". I'm really, and obviously very, very skinny. So like I handle my alcohol well for my size, but still not very well.
7 stones, huh?
Yeah.
If you're 7 stones, I got to be about, around 18 to 20.
18 would be like you wouldn't be able to walk like that.
Oh, wow. Maybe I'm 14 then. I feel like I'm twice your weight.
I just looked it up and I'm 13 stone.
You're 13 stone?
Yes. I weigh 185 pounds. 6 foot?
Let's look it up. What do we all weigh in stones?
I mean, I'm not giant, but I'm not small.
I mean, I probably put on weight. I'm probably about seven and a half stone.
18 stones. 18.07 stones.
You're 18
That's how much I weigh.
Stone.
Yeah, man.
We're in America. Our milk had hormones in it growing up.
I just grew up on the butter sugar bread. That's the American diet that I grew up on. Mom would just be like, hey, are you hungry? And then it would be like, yes. And then she'd just be like, here's a piece of bread with butter and sugar on it. And then just like shove it in our 5-year-old mouths.
Is that a joke?
No, that's serious.
Butter sugar bread was a...
Sugar bread, man. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, guys.
Yeah, man.
In the 90s, McDonald's sold a playset that you would put a piece of white bread into this little thing that you cranked and it would cut it into French fries. And they had little recipes where you would toss it in cinnamon and sugar.
Like, yeah, oh baby.
We did this to ourselves.
You do to yourself. You do. From Essex to Texas. It's the Armchair Apex Podcast. What's going on? We're already recording, man. We're going stones to pounds. Everybody email us. What's your weight in stones? Armchairapex@gmail.com. We're just going to start.
What's the name of your first pet? What street do you live on?
Are you trying to get into the email address right now? Because I will give you the security questions and I won't even edit it out for our email address. That's how much I want people to email us. Come in and just run our email address. I don't care.
The current intern doing a shit job.
You want to intern for us? Email us, armchairapex@gmail.com. And just actually, if you want to intern for us, just go ahead and hack into the email address and then that'll be your application. Are you able to hack the internet? You're hired and we will pay you in butter sugar bread. I'm joined once again by Mr. Aaron Morphew from Houston, Texas, and Mr. James Lingy, 12 Lingfield from Essex, England. And man, what a weekend we got on race stuff. We'll cover it all. Aaron is seeming pretty hyped. He's headed to the Canadian Grand Prix this weekend, and I'm very jealous. You showed us the map of the general admission area, and it was very small, microscopic, as Mr. Bean might even say. I was kind of surprised. I figured they would be giving y'all some space to roam out there by turn 4 and 5, because that's where I would go. But what's your plan right now?
My plan is to get there and figure out how disappointed I'm going to be by it after the first day.
From having to watch Nicholas TV's last race, or?
From what I've been reading, the general admission areas are few and far between, also pretty small as far as like as space goes. And there's also like decently high barriers. Two of the people I'm traveling with to Montreal to see this race are around 5'3". So I'm just wondering if they're going to be able to see anything or if they're just going to experience some nice race car sounds.
Shout out to Elise and whoever else you're going with.
The other short person.
Shout out to Elise and the other short. Shout out to Elise for allowing Aaron to do this podcast, even though you find it very silly. And you know what? I don't blame you. Pretty much anything grown men do outside of work is typically very silly.
True.
It's not an inaccurate statement, at all. So, man, I'm kind of jealous, man. I would definitely want to go and just be able to watch that Grand Prix from the hairpin on Sunday. I don't know what you're going to do for quality or free practice. I told you to scout it out, man.
I definitely will. I like the shit part about this whole thing is I was in the queue and I had the tickets in my cart to check out. For the grandstand and the hairpin, and they sold out. Like as I was checking out, it updated the cart and said they weren't there.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, that was pretty dope. But I feel fortunate that I even got tickets because apparently it's been first come first served since 2020. So if you had tickets, or I'm sorry, like the first ride refusal were for ticket holders in 2020.
I remember it not being not going forward last year. I remember the Grand Prix being canceled last year and just being super bummed that we weren't going to see Canada last year. What was I going to say?
That Lewis Hamilton might not race this weekend, or at least that's what Toto Wolff wants us to believe.
His thoracic spine is just detaching from the rest of his torso.
Man, do not fall for PR Sadies, guys.
They PR are Sadies.
Look, I don't believe the people that are like, oh, he's making it up or anything. He's obviously not. He's an old man. Okay, I'm 22 and I started getting back pain when I was like 19. So I don't want to even think about what Lewis is going through when he's like 68. But I do feel for him. I mean, look at those onboards were horrid. And it wasn't just Lewis this weekend. I know Ricardo mentioned it. Magnussen's physio mentioned it. Like, that is horrible what they're being put through.
It's pretty wild to watch those onboards. And I was trying to imagine what it's like, not only just being the feeling of being in a car while that's happening, because I think the only reference point we have is, you know, road cars. And stuff like that, and that cross lap and going, I don't know what, 80 miles an hour max. Aaron, I don't know how fast your English bread wagon goes on the 45 there on I-10.
It has 44 horsepower, so not very quick.
Wait, is that literal? That's a literal amount, 44 horsepower?
Well, I mean, probably pushing 47 with the open header that's on it now.
Okay, there. Well, you got three horsepower. And that's really what pushing through a season is all about, is horsepower by any means. But like I was thinking earlier about what it's like, not only with just that general feeling of the porpoising, but their shoulders are, and correct me if I'm wrong because I don't have a picture in front of me, but like basically the only thing protruding from the top of that protection layer in the cockpit is their neck, right? Because their shoulders are also above or below rather that whole neck device. So you're kind of, they're getting caught on that. Like your shoulders have to be hitting that, right? That's got to be a thing where your shoulders are either hitting that or the harness, and something's giving there at some point, but they do have the Hans device, right? So they got the Hans. So I just kind of think about what is the strain overall? Is it just being deflected to the entire body? You know, is it like a neck thing? Because I'm like, ooh, if their body is staying down, but their neck is popping up, like that's got to suck, you know?
Well, they were saying that they were actually measuring it as 5 vertical G every time the car bounced.
Mm.
Which that's probably like, and then now the conversation has really transferred over to like CTE, because like these people are having like micro concussions while this is going on. This is becoming, you know, it's been dangerous. It's becoming more dangerous, especially since like Formula One seems to be obsessed with street circuits only now.
Yeah, only street circuits. I'm actually kind of okay with that, but the street circuits are just so unpredictable as far as like the surface. I was watching an old Canadian Grand Prix, not 2012 actually, but another year, and the hairpin there was just like they had to like sand it over like for the race. It was, I don't remember what year, might have been like in the late 2000s, maybe 2008, 2009, but like the hairpin was just, it looked like they had just put sand over it to kind of like compensate for the surface being so uneven. You're just like, wow, what even is going on? But the question then becomes, are there immediate actions to be taken? Because it seems like if FIA was to take any action, there wouldn't be any sort of mechanical regulations put in effect until 2023, right? So what is the action to be taken right now, if any? Are they trying to prevent like a wreck? Is it really a choice between performance and driver safety in these teams? I think the stress point for me is, or at least the point of conflict, is who makes the decision? Do you leave it up to the teams to make a decision on their driver safety to sacrifice performance? Do you implement, you know, a minimum ride height kind of seems a little ludicrous, because at some point you're talking about punishing the teams that did figure it out and figured out a solution to it, and then bringing them back down to everybody else. Do you minimize or do you implement like a maximum G load and do like a, what's that red, that black and yellow flag? If you got a driver on Saturday that's got like a max G load, and, you know, have them, you know, make adjustments between Saturday and Sunday through that loophole in Park Firm that says you can make adjustments based on safety, because there is a thing where that says that you can make adjustments if it's, you know, a safety issue. If it's a safety issue, do, you know, I assume there's not, you can't just do everything, but if there's something you could do to mitigate a safety issue, you're allowed to do that in the regulations. So that's my question. That's what I've been thinking about is where, you know, who makes the decisions? Are we trying to do something immediately to prevent a wreck? What point are we at right now?
I think the only fair way to do it is to allow for active suspension. Because again, if we institute a minimum ride height, that is just punishing people that got it right. If they institute active suspension, it'll give the people who did figure it out the opportunity to do it even better.
Yeah, that is.
If it is truly about safety.
Have you guys heard about the inert, I think it's called an inert bar or like a J bar up front that was actually banned last year, but apparently it, don't quote me on this, because I'm not a Mercedes tech or anything, but like it, apparently it's a piece that you can put in the front suspension that, really just kind of dampens the whole effect of porpoising and kind of stops the front suspension from accelerating a little bit more and kind of takes the pressure off of the back suspension. And then essentially just in effect, it's a piece in there. It's not too expensive, that could probably kind of mitigate a lot of the porpoising that we're seeing. And it's something that all teams could do, but again, it might be something that might not make sense for a lot of teams to implement, but it is something that was banned last year that actually would have had a better effect on it this year.
That's interesting, actually. I mean, there must be a better solution. I think that the thing you suggested about, changing between quali and the race was an interesting one. And I think having max G loads could be, because then you don't punish the teams that have done well for it. Plus you can enforce changes. And at the same time, then you gamify safety. And then a team won't be willing to make that advantage to gain lap time if it's going to get a 5-place grid penalty, for example. That's a really good point, Andrew.
It just makes you wonder, you know, at what point does the FIA step in? Like, where's that crossover point is what I've been thinking about. Where's the crossover point between the teams need to make a decision and make sacrifices, or the FIA as a governing body needs to do something about this? Because I do feel like regardless, if there's no, if there's nothing done, we're going to see a pretty horrible incident at some point. Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't see one this weekend, with the 16 and 17, those turns being, I mean, it's a slight kink in the road, but it's still a flat out straight, and it's a straight that you're taking while the car's porpoising, and you're still turning at the same time. So like if that turn happens at some point and those rear tires lift off the ground even a little bit, while they're going 190, 200, I think they're probably going about 180, 190 miles per hour at that point. They haven't hit DRS yet. Lance Stroll last year times 5 or something like that. You don't want to see anybody make a blowout on that turn into that straight. So luckily nothing happened, but you just keep wondering if there's nothing done, are we going to see something like that on some of these other tracks, coming up? I mean, you know, we have France coming up. They've got a pretty flat straight on the, I believe it's sector 2 out of the chicane from that first straight. And then you do the chicane left, right. And then you have that straight down and then it takes that big sweeping right. That's flat. That's a flat thing. You know, how many circuits where Silverstone is another one where Silverstone is just all fast corners, you know? So it's like we're coming up to this stretch of tracks where you've got all these fast corners and you've got these cars doing this. I don't know.
Spa is scaring me. The idea of cars going off Eau Rouge, porpoising, flat, is only going to end badly. And even, I mean, I know Eau Rouge has been reprofiled. I think Blanchimont could even be worse because Blanchimont really is flat. And that is only you're going for long enough to already, because you take the corner before that in fifth. So you're already up to quick, good speed. The porpoising cars will porpoise there.
Right.
And then if you're bouncing, you skip over the curb, that is a really high speed crash.
Yeah.
And obviously Eau Rouge, like I'm hoping that it's slow enough now that you need to brake. Cause I think if you need to brake, normally when you get on the brakes, porpoising stops. So you'd probably be okay there, but just we like everything in F1, it will be allowed to continue until it's too late. And lots of drivers. I mean, Jules Bianchi found that out the hard way. Roman Grosjean was incredibly lucky not to find that out the hard way.
Yeah.
And I just worry for when we're going to find that out.
Yeah. Mick Schumacher 14 times this season, you know, 87 times this season. And the unfortunate part about that, not to dive too far into philosophical territory, but I mean, that seems to be the case with a lot of things outside of even Formula One, right? There's not a lot of action taken, unfortunately, until something's done. But I guess we'll see, man. I guess we'll see. Hopefully they figure something out. I've always kind of, it's been a curious thing to me how we're talking about a motorsport that is the pinnacle of engineering and ingenuity in a lot of ways. But then they come to these problems where everybody's just like, huh, I don't know. And it's just like, really? You don't know? Like, you're all rocket scientists, literally. Like, all of you could go from these teams and just work for NASA, you know, or literally take your pick of any agency that's sending things into space. And they'd be like, yeah, come work for us. You know, so it's like, nobody's got a thing. No, do we all want to meet in a town hall somewhere? And people just start raising their hands. Let's Apollo 13 it. Let's just all get into a room with some stuff in a box and just, you know, we got to figure out how to put this sock over this air filter. Let's figure it out.
We had somewhat of a race this past weekend, though.
Ferrari double DNF. Carlos Sainz at first. I was like, come on, man. And then I realized it wasn't up to him. Golly, it was just like a rough time he's been having of it. And then Leclerc DNFs, and then what, three or four other Ferraris DNF as well. And you just kind of wonder what's going on, not only with the works team, but with their customer teams. MGUK seems to be a big deal with them. I don't know if they're getting their engines and the MGUK units to play nicely. Seems to be kind of a deal.
Latest information I've seen on it is they're not sure whether it's actually in the power unit itself or if it's in the kinetic recovery. My question is, just how long until they make some sort of change? How long until the board at Ferrari is just like, we got to get rid of someone from the top? Like, not that I think that Binotto is like heads on the chopping block, but like, who pays for this? Who's messing this up?
Yeah. You know, somebody in that engineering department. I wonder, I'm surprised I haven't seen names floating around so far in the media sphere. I guess they kind of keep that under wraps. But I was looking at Binotto and his distant stare as he saw both of his cars DNF, and you just see the life melting from his eyes. You're just like, oh, man.
Shot of the season was after both cars DNF'd and it just turned back over to their pit wall and it was just packed up. I was just like, that is
Yeah, it wasn't immediate, right? It was like a little, it was like a few laps later, but it cut back to them and they were just like, it looked like they were moving apartments, you know? It looked like that scene at the end of the movie where the character's like moving and it's like, oh, time for a change. And they're just like packing up boxes. There's like U-Haul trucks behind them for whatever reason.
I like to think Giovinazzi coming back, like, he went to the toilet halfway through the race and he came back. You know Will Smith in that scene in The Fresh Prince when he's looking around before he moves out and there's no furniture? It's like, guys, where'd you all go?
What's going on? I thought you were going to say I Am Legend. That's just a barren ghost town over there. They packed everything. That's going to be weird, packing everything up before a race is even over. Just like, all right, I guess we're out, guys.
I mean, they have only less than a week to get from Eastern Europe to North America.
Yeah. Well, better start doing it now.
Nice scheduling, man. F1 is the most carbon neutral sport in the world. Oh yeah, by the way, we traveled halfway around the world for no reason.
30 degrees on the tire blankets, man. Come on.
That's gonna save it, guys. I know we travel halfway around the world with 10 corporations, but the cups at the venues are made out of cardboard. So really, it's carbon neutral. There is actually, I would like you guys to guess, as of 2019, so travel is the biggest contributor to carbon, to climate change from F1. What is the percentage of travel in terms of F1's carbon footprint?
As far as their total?
Yeah.
80%.
Okay, I sound a lot less impressive now. It's 45%.
That's still a lot.
Yeah.
That's still a lot.
Tomo, if any of you guys know Tomo F1 on YouTube, he did a really interesting video on Seb and climate change and a level of hypocrisy. And it was really interesting how little the cars themselves contribute to climate change, that they're so energy efficient.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I remember hearing running all 20 cars for practice quality in the race throughout a whole season is about the same amount of fuel as a transatlantic flight.
Yeah.
So that and that's crazy to think about, and it's only going to get better. And also, yeah. I do think F1 deserves a lot of credit for like its trickle-down technology. Like, F1 engines are making a huge difference in fighting climate change, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, have you ever like gone down the rabbit hole of all of the technology that came out of Formula One?
Not fully.
So you know whenever you go to like the grocery store or the market and that there's those open top refrigerators?
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently that was designed by the Williams technology department. They created that technology.
That's right. Why?
I don't like something with aerodynamics. They figured out how to move cold air over the top of an open top box. And they were just like, nice. This is good for something. We don't know what yet.
George Russell was in the factory like, guys, this car is such a fridge. I was like, oh, bingo. I'm going to save the world. Yeah.
Apparently that and the kinetic energy recovery system that is on most city buses, also designed by Williams.
No wonder they're last on the grid. They're trying to save the world at the same time. Guys, qualify higher than 14th, and then you can save the world.
Salmon Croquettes, brought to you by Frank Williams.
What a legend.
What did you guys think of the race overall? Was it more or less entertaining than last year?
Oh, definitely less.
Yeah?
Yeah.
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 It was the worst Azerbaijan Grand Prix that I can remember, and I think that says an awful lot about how good Baku as a circuit is. It wasn't a bad race at all, but just I think compared to the chaos we normally get around Baku, it was quite quiet. It's still a good race.
It was certainly like less eventful than last year, right? Mm. It was like there were no huge crashes, nothing like that. It seemed like a lot of the drama happened in qualifying Saturday. And really the only thing that opened it up Sunday was Ferrari's kind of screwing the pooch. Mm. And then losing it for themselves. But other than that, it was a pretty quiet Sunday.
Two virtual safety cars, no full safety car.
Safety cars. I don't like that.
I really think that can be attributed to the fact that the runoffs, despite the fact that the track I do think is kind of lame with all the 90 degree turns, the fact that they're able to put those proper runoffs in there for Sebastian Vettel to botch the turn, do a quick 180 degree turn, get back on track, and still manage to finish in the points. I think
that was
excellent.
At once disappointing and freaking awesome.
Oh, that was so cool.
That was so
cool.
That was so, like, that was my favorite part of the race.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I was disappointed because he didn't make the overtake. He had it in the bag, but then the quickness at which he just turned it around immediately and kept going, that might be more impressive than that overtake. And that's not an easy overtake. I happen to like those 90 degree turns because they don't really exist anywhere else. On the calendar, you don't just have like three 90 degree turns in a row. Like a box just looks like a shoebox, that whole section down there. But I was reading something that was talking about how that's like the most difficult breaking point maybe on the entire calendar is into turn three, because your margin for error, knowing like whether or not you're going to be able to even make that turn is so difficult. That runoff right there has to be there.
It's black and white though. You either are making it or you aren't. So it doesn't allow for there to be like cool overtaking because there's, you know, my car is more capable of taking, you know, this section better than like, you see what I'm saying? Like it's, you either make the turn or you don't. There's no like taking it around the outside of a 90 degree turn that's two cars, you know, wide.
Definitely not there. I mean, you definitely have a better chance on turns one and two. And then basically your overtaking is happening on that straight.
And it was less exciting than you thought it was going to be.
It was this year, definitely. There's no doubt about that. But I did find it interesting how it grouped the cars together so well, because you can't hide behind that straight. Even with toes this year, especially, what was interesting was the fact that there's so much less turbulent air with these cars that the toe helps, but it does not help as much as it did last year, especially with like DRS and stuff like that. So like it grouped those cars together really well, better than I think any other track has done so far. So like for the most part, there were a lot of teams, especially in that midfield, that were pretty close together, if not just back to back. Alfa Romeo's and Haas's were pretty close together that whole time from qualifying. I might have to double check on the results there. I'll pull that up right now. But pretty wild how close together those results really were, at least for the starting grid.
Yeah, I mean, the grid was very sort of split between your like two front running teams, then Mercedes, then your top of the midfield, then your bottom of the midfield, and then your Williams and Mick Schumacher. You know, or although I say that Vettel was the outlier this race. I think Vettel deserved driver of the day for his great performance with the spin, which, by the way, that spin, that is a man that had watched Top Gun this weekend, because there's no way you pull off that 180 without hearing Danger Zone within the last 48 hours. Seb was so good this weekend. Like that Aston, don't forget, is the second worst car on the grid, and he got it sick like it was nothing, while losing easy, 8 seconds in that spin?
Yeah.
Like that is what Seb Vettel should be doing at Aston Martin. And it's great to see him back like that.
Yeah, no doubt. It really is. Man, Lance Stroll is not doing good this year at all.
No.
Really not good. It's just surprising because, one, he's not a rookie. And two, he's done so well comparatively with the other seasons.
At this track in particular.
Yeah, at this track too. What was he like his rookie season here? Like P3, right?
Yeah, I think that part of his issue with being so slow is they're actually starting to manufacture more of his car out of stainless steel to save money on repairs. Because I don't know if you guys saw that car go head first into the wall and then just be fine.
Yeah, that was super weird. I'm like, man, these front wings on these new cars are like really strong. Yeah. Just like bouncing off.
After, like, did you guys figure out why exactly after hitting the wall, he just drove past the pit lane and then just bend it again? Like, I don't know. Why did he drive past the pit lane and try and go on another lap?
I could only think he didn't think he had time, or he thought the car was okay. But I mean, I reckon the tires are flat spotted.
Yeah.
And like, he just chucked it in the wall. Like, I don't know. Like, let's be honest, Lance Stroll on a good day, I wouldn't necessarily back him to get around the track in one piece.
But, well, did they, were they protecting Seb's qualifying position? Did they know that he was going to bend it?
You can't risk that, surely. I mean, you can't guarantee that's going to happen. You know, you can't, had it not been for Alonso Gate in Q1.
Yes, him doing that did actually create the villain arc of the season.
See, I completely disagree with you. I think all top-level sports need those people that are going to bend the rules, do anything to win. And it's like, it's funny to me when I see like Alonso go, oh, my tires are locking up as he goes at like the literal speed limit.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I don't like it. I'm just saying he's a dickhead.
I could hear the... Like a Tom and Jerry, like banana peel sound effect. It's like, whoa, as he went down the escape road, like cruising. I mean, that was the, I can't believe he didn't get penalized for that either.
Oh, definitely.
It was
so
obvious. Like, look at the gap between him and the car ahead as well. Like, and it was just to get out of Q1. He'd have easily got out of Q1. Why did he even do that?
To screw other people over.
You do kind of wonder what he's up to.
I think Max was a great villain last year. But it's Alonso's a much funnier villain, and I like that.
I just want to know, like, what his strategy with that was. Do you guys know, like, what his motivation behind that was?
Him still thinking that he's in contention for a win every single weekend.
Crashgate ruined his brain. He still counts that as a legitimate win. So what if I can win that? I mean, no, seriously, off the top of my head, I think there was someone in the bottom five that would have been a competitor to him. I mean, Magnussen was there. I think there was someone else. So maybe it was his thought, let's knock them out. But maybe he just thought it'd be funny. Like, honestly, I can imagine that being his literally only logic, is thinking, I'll do this and it'll be funny. Watch.
Yeah. I'm just curious to see what his logic is, because I don't know. No, but nobody's really talked to him.
Magnussen and Albon's the person who got directly screwed over, but Magnussen's the one who got blocked from putting in an actual fast lap.
Albon could have overtaken Kevin, so that's... Oh, no, what am I talking about? Kevin could have overtaken Alonso, so I get that.
If there is anybody to screw over, it's got to be Albon, because you're basically just facing zero consequences other than him just being like, they raced me so hard. He's like the George McFly of F1.
My favorite part of Q1, though, was Zhou Guanyu, P9 at the end of Q1. I thought the car was on for a serious, some seriously good pace.
Yeah, he had the beating of Bottas all weekend. Easily his best weekend in F1. What do you guys think about Zhou? I think he's someone that, of all the drivers this season, has probably been discussed the least.
He hasn't been able to finish a race yet.
Yeah, and it's not of his own volition.
It's just his car, man. It's wild how... As I was right there with him, he was just so ticked off. He was like about as mad as that guy is going to get. He was like, guys, seriously. You're like, yep, he's mad. He's like, seriously.
I think that he is far more competitive than we're getting to see. And I think that this is going to be the rookie season that could have been. Just like I said previously, I think the guy's great. I love his interaction with the team. I love his, like, I love like everything that he has to say. I just think that he doesn't have a car that is delivering for him, and he's going to end up probably fizzling out of the sport too soon.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to fizzle out. I definitely know that they just need to fix whatever is going on. Let him finish a race. He doesn't have the opportunity to provide results yet. So yeah, I mean, I would be so mad if I was him. James, what were you saying?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I think when you're judging sort of someone's rookie season, whether you're a fan or a team boss, I think you have to look at sometimes points and results can be a bit misleading. And he hasn't set the world alight, but he's got a tough yardstick in Bottas. And he's done perfectly fine. I mean, I think I've seen no evidence to say that he doesn't deserve next year. And then, you know, hopefully he finishes a race. His car's in one piece. They don't need to get the gaffer tape out like they did this weekend. And yeah, let's go from there.
Yeah, let's definitely do that. I don't have enough info yet to form an opinion because he just hasn't been able to finish anything.
I must say, when I asked you guys, what do you think of Guan Yu Zhou? I didn't expect both of you to say, I don't know. But actually, it makes complete sense because we don't know. We totally, I feel like it's sort of a similar situation to Tsunoda last season. At this point last season, where there was too many things, like mitigating circumstances to really know where we're at.
I can comfortably say that I think that he is better than Mick Schumacher, Lance Stroll, Nicholas Latifi, probably Alex Albon, and Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh, I think Albon's been okay.
I don't know about Albon, but that's probably a safe bet for those other three guys.
Oh, I also included Daniel Ricciardo in there.
Maybe. You got a better case for Ricciardo than Albon, I think. But yeah, probably so. And speaking of, I mean, so we've got Ricciardo. Who else? It's Ricciardo, and then we've got our Latifi Piastri talks. But let's get Ricciardo out of the way real quick. Actually finishing ahead of Lando this race, you know, both McLarens, P8, P9 for the race, P11, P12 starting grid. So yeah, about a net 4-place gain for both, switching spots there at the end for Daniel to come out ahead for his first, like, you know, instance of beating his teammate this season. So, I mean, we did have a bit of a positive result for him this weekend, albeit in a car that was not on the pace at all.
It's the slowest car through the speed trap.
Slowest through the speed trap, man. You cannot hide on the speed trap.
I don't think that this is a positive, as much of a positive result as people are trying to make it out to be.
Yeah, I don't know if it's being made out to be one. I don't know what the big buzz around it is. I haven't read much about it. I just know it's better than the rest of the season, which isn't saying much.
I think it's a massive step forward. I mean, whether... Maybe our standards have been readjusted in the last few years, but I mean, don't forget, Lando Norris is one of the most informed drivers on this whole grid, and he was on the pace of him. You know, if for the rest of the season, right, every single race, Ricciardo finishes and qualifies within two positions of Lando Norris, I think he totally deserves another seat in F1. I think that's sort of what we are perfectly fine with. For Ricciardo.
This result is a bit of a lie because Daniel Ricciardo finished eighth and there was five retirements, three of which honestly comfortably ahead of him.
For me, it's not really well done he finished eighth. It's well done he finished ahead of Norris on merit. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's more the point, because the McLaren is not a straight line car. It was always going to struggle in Baku. You know, I think really of the retirements, the two Ferraris would have finished ahead of him. Yuki would have finished. So they just missed out on points, just about. Still, I mean, he was well on the pace of Lando. And that is something we have not seen for a long time. I mean, think of Spain. he started like three or four places ahead of him, and he just tumbled through the order. And that did not happen this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's a question of if he can keep this up. I doubt he can for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But if he can manage to do that, because if he stays on the pace of Lando, then he might end up splitting, you know, results with Lando for the rest of the season. However unlikely that might be, if he's able to do that somehow, like between last race and this one, he had some sort of recovery montage, like an action movie, and just figured it out or something. And now he's good to go.
Boxing a kangaroo.
Yeah, like boxing a kangaroo or something like that. We're gonna go down under, drink some wine, and then he's like boxing a kangaroo or something. Then, like, yeah, I mean, I think he's earned a right to get another crack at it next season. But it's pretty safe to say if what he's done so far is par for the course for the rest of the season, and maybe he's able to eke out a bit of an improvement, that might not be sufficient. We're going to see Danny Ric in NASCAR. You either keep your edge or you don't, man. Seb's figured out how to do it. A lot of these guys have figured out how to do it. But I think Ricardo is starting from a place where he was never a world champion, not that consistent of a race winner, was able to poke one out here and there, but a great driver. But we're talking about the top 20 in the world, so it's pretty tough to keep your seat.
It was an off weekend for Lando, and Ricardo, with adjustment, finished in 11th place. And we also learned that Lando is a little bit of a prima donna on the radio.
I hate to be boring, but I really hate like this, like judging of drivers' tones and attitudes over the radio. I mean, like they are exhausted, dehydrated, go around at 200 mile an hour. George Russell is the only like exception. He's like, "Oi, crikey, Verstappen's" kind of thing. A little bit erratic, if you ask me. Like, it's totally normal that drivers are going to swear and be annoying and everything. And he doesn't mean that, I don't think, you know.
I think he did mean it, because he was actually putting together, they weren't like, you know, breathy, quick sentences. He was just like, he was like, "Hey, I didn't let him pass when he was faster because we were, you know, doing this for strategy. This is for race finish position." He was like being on the radio, like, "I'm the number one driver here." He's like, "Look at me. I am the captain now."
I could see it both ways. I think he clearly is the number one driver. That's not up for debate. I am reluctant to kind of judge anyone based off of what they're saying after 41 laps in a street circuit in Azerbaijan in a car that's been shaking them around like a snow globe. So look, we're going to get to hot take corner. But first, let's talk about something that has been going around the blogosphere, the media sphere, the rumor sphere, the Piastri sphere, the Latifi sphere. Oscar Piastri in a Williams. We know it's most likely going to happen in 2023. The question is, will he be replacing Nicholas Latifi for 2022 after his home race in Canada this weekend?
I think that Alpine is, I don't think, I know Alpine is obligated to announce either, they're obligated to announce a seat for him. Otherwise, they lose his, I don't think they call them bird rights in Formula One, but that's what they are in other sports.
Yeah.
They're obligated to announce something like immediately. Otherwise, he becomes a free agent.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Can they extend that, or is that
the only way they can extend it is to say that they've got him a deal through them to another team, which the word on the street is that it's going to be Williams, or for them to announce that he is going to be, you know, an Alpine driver.
Yeah, he's got a clause, right? So he's got to be somewhere next year.
I don't see the downside to him replacing Latifi midseason.
I think the only thing is it's a bit of a baptism of fire, and you don't want to kill his confidence before he's even started. I think I'm right in saying that Silverstone this weekend, you can't give a full-time seat to someone that has not driven an F1 car in an actual session.
He's driven this F1 car.
Not in a session, though.
He did have time in the Alpine from last season at Abu Dhabi.
I thought he did testing this year.
I thought he did as well.
An official competitive session then, let's say. I mean, the only mid-season driver swaps I can think of off the top of my head recently were like Gasly, Albon, Kvyat, etc., where a team was fighting for something wasn't working, they made a driver change. Where I think getting in Piastri this season when I can't even guarantee he'd be better than Latifi, because as bad as Latifi's been, he has 2.5 years experience in Williams under his belt, and Piastri has none. And then I think if you go around and your whole F1 experience is being P20 every weekend, is that a good building block for your career? I'm not convinced.
That's the question, I guess, right? Are they going to pull out any sort of net positive from swapping midseason? And might it be a negative because you are removing some funding from Nicholas Latifi's seat not being filled by Nicholas Latifi, who brings in money? Is Dorlton covering the loss on that enough to where it doesn't make sense and they're just wanting to get a driver that's maybe able to put on some numbers? But to think that this guy is going to come in and just immediately do better, unless the bar for Williams is somebody that's going to come in and maybe not wreck as much. Is that what they're looking for? Somebody to just save money on like not wrecking the gearbox every weekend?
If Dorlton Capital is interested in flipping this team, they're wanting to flip this team because of results, you know, or wanting to be able to, you know, increase the value of this team with having better results. Nicholas Latifi's covering his paycheck and his damage to the car. He's like, it's not actually like a surplus of money for them. Dorlton has the money to operate their own team, especially in the cost cap era. So why would they continue just to have like a useless seat for Nicholas Latifi? He's not doing anything except for paying for himself.
I did hear somewhere that Williams is one of the first teams to be kind of bumping up against the cost cap, which is interesting.
They're the first team to get in trouble with the cost cap, but it wasn't actually because of expenditure. It was because they were like late in filing something.
Oh, clerical error.
Yes.
Happens to the best of us.
That's still not a good sign, though.
No, not at all. I mean, it's not a good sign that they're finally fully funded, like Latifi or otherwise, and they still are at the back of the grid.
If anything, they've taken a step back this year. I don't know if it's just the Russell factor, but I felt like Williams had a better chance of scoring points on any given weekend last season than he did this season. And that's such a shame. When I think everyone thought the new regs, they come forward and really make a stride, and they are unarguably the worst car this year. And maybe the gap isn't as big as it's been, but that's not an achievement.
Albon has scored 3 points.
Which is impressive for the record. In that bad Williams is very impressive. And he was a P12 again this weekend, which is not bad.
It's earlier in the season than George Russell did it last year.
That's true.
The Williams just looked fast, man. And typically that's a good indication. All right. The Ferrari looks fast. It is fast. Okay. The Williams looked awesome. And then it just isn't doing it. If your car looks fast, it should be fast. That should be a rule.
What do you guys think about this? Do you think Piastri is announced at Silverstone or before Silverstone?
No. It's way too early in the season to announce a new driver.
No, I'm saying as a mid-season replacement.
100% he's not a mid-season replacement. And 99% he won't be announced to be replacing Latifi at Silverstone. It's too big a cross on Latifi's back. And that's just going to make the situation worse.
I think he comes in for 23. I think we've got a bunch of rumors, but I sent that link to you guys yesterday and today, and then I just don't see a lot backing that up. I think it's just kind of like a rumor mill thing. I think there's a bunch of silt being stirred up from the bottom of the floor. I would rather him be in that seat, honestly. I mean, it would be more exciting as far as like new blood in there, and as far as like pure results, I don't know how many people at that team are actually expecting a rookie to just come in and just relatively wreck shop relative to what the past results have been. I mean, he's not going to be P9s or anything like that, but like, I don't know if there's evidence to suggest he would just come in and just pull out P15s, P16s to 18, something like that, for the rest of the season. I don't know if he's just got the experience yet, especially if he hasn't driven as much as thought, because I kind of had the impression that he was doing testing all year. Like he was a test driver at Alpine, and he's putting in a lot of seat time in that Alpine car. So if he hasn't, then, and he doesn't have that much experience, then I don't know what would be expected of him midseason.
Counterpoint, maybe Williams is a good car and Albon and Latifi just both suck.
If Piastri is better than Alex Albon, kick them both out. But I think Albon's doing almost as good as he can.
Yeah.
I think if you had put Russell in that car again this season, I don't know if he'd have a much better result than what Albon's getting right now.
Yeah.
I think he's tied down. I think it's easier to be tied down with these cars this year than it is last year.
I want chaos. I want Latifi to, because they already painted the grandstand. They already painted Latifi on the grandstand. They're going to let him race his home race. Then he's out of there for Silverstone.
After his podium finish in Toronto, you mean?
Don't get into my hot takes, man. And it's Montreal.
Oh, it's all the same. It's all the same.
It's all the same.
Wow.
I guess we'll just do the British Grand Prix in Scotland now, huh?
No, that's just a different. No, that's just a different country. You have any? You could have named like a different city. See, this is why America. At least I went the same city. This is why Americans are so terrible.
I guess we'll just have the British Grand Prix in Liverpool. I guess we'll just do that.
It took you a good 10 seconds to come up with another UK city there. And don't pretend that it wasn't.
I was thinking in terms of bands. Like, I was like, do I want to go Arctic Monkeys in Sheffield, or do I want to go Beatles in Liverpool? Okay. I was thinking in terms of rock bands. And at the end of the day, I feel like Liverpool probably has a better racetrack there. So,
the Scouse Grand Prix. It's lights out and away we go, la.
Time for your acid trip, Dewey. All right. So, look, we'll see after the Canadian Grand Prix. But I do know the one thing. It is time for Hot Take Corner. Who wants to start it off this week?
I think Aaron does. Well, I think as last week's champion, Aaron did win the Twitter poll, which, by the way, and I am going to take issue with this. Your hot take being Ricardo is washed is not a hot take. That is not in the spirit of Hot Take Corner. So you get the point this time, but you are on fraud watch, Mr.
Wait, did he win a Twitter poll?
He did. He won the Twitter poll.
By the way, James, great job with our Twitter. You know,
I do try.
You're doing a great job with the Twitter. I like the takes. We do need some more game hate. We need to start hating the game a lot more.
Andrew, what do you mean? You can buy hoodies. What more do you want in a racing simulator?
You can buy sofas and race the sofas. Dude, I'm sorry to derail the Hot Take Corner, but let's stop here for a second. All of the YouTubers, even Marcel Kiefer, Mr. Red Bull F1 esports guy, is like having to do the run-throughs of the F1 life, and you can like see it in his face that he hates doing it. It's just the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It looks like the Tiger Woods game, the EA Tiger Woods game, where you got to like buy clothes and stuff like that. Man, what are we doing? And then you don't give us classic cars. You give us supercars that where the tires screech as if we're in a car chase from the 1980s. Like the engineer's yelling at you through the speaker. The engineer's just over there like, we need to refuel. We need to refuel immediately. Like, hey, man, what are you yelling at me for right now? What's going on? What game is this?
You're living out the fantasy of being an F1 driver, and your engineer explains to you what DRS is. You can use DRS when you're within 1 second of the car ahead. Yes, I know. I'm
in the DRS zone.
What's a DRS zone, Anthony Davidson? A DRS zone is a great way to overtake.
I hate it so much. It just bugs me so much. We'll see. Game comes out in 3 weeks. I still pre-ordered a copy because I'm in a league race. And even though the game forgets about all the league players and doesn't care about multiplayer, it only cares about my team fans. Still got it. So anyway, Hot Take Corner for this week. Aaron, what you got?
So I think that Sebastian Vettel retires this season. I think that Lewis Hamilton will also retire this season. I think that Lawrence Stroll is going to bring in a worse driver than Lance Stroll to make his son look better. I think that worse driver will be Mick Schumacher.
Wow.
This is new world order. This is what the Illuminati are doing.
This is what we need here at Hot Take. Aaron might have just made up for both weeks' hot takes with this hot take.
For a second, I thought you were going to say Sebastian Vettel's going to retire, Lewis Hamilton's going to retire, Lawrence Stroll will buy Mercedes, Lance Stroll will be world champion. But that's one too many, even for you.
I will unsubscribe from you just like I did Chain Bear.
Andy D., how do you follow that up?
Oh, I'm going to go last again. I'm going to go last every Hot Take Corner. James, what do you got?
Okay.
I'm going to start the clock. I'll start it right now.
You ready? Got it?
Yeah, I got it. And go.
You judge the quality of a racetrack purely on its excitement. The fans are cool. The atmosphere is cool. The history is cool. But that is all anyone cares about, the excitement of a race. The best track on the Formula One calendar is Baku. It's only been going for, what, 5-6 years? And there are already more classic moments in the Baku memory than any other track in the last 10 years. I mean, he brake-checked me. Or when was that my time? Damn.
That was your time. But you got the point out. And I kind of agree with you, man. I think you got a case there.
I think this weekend not being a great race is going to hurt me.
I think a net out of the last five. It's weird how it started out as the European Grand Prix too. Bring Valencia back. That's what we need to do. That's not my hot take, by the way. I got two mini takes that will amount to one hot take.
Okay. I'll allow it.
Aaron, you want to start the timer for me?
Let me reopen my timer.
I can't time myself. That's a conflict of interest.
And ready, set, go.
F1 22 by EA Sports will be the worst Formula One game released in the last 20 years. Were the worst Formula One game. I'm not optimistic. And my main hot take is Formula One needs to figure out a way to engineer down the risk for refueling to where they're able to bring it back into the sport. Formula One needs refueling for race strategy and
that's it.
To shrink the cars down.
I think firstly on refueling, I think the only difficulty is it's not transparent, it's hard for it to be seen. And also I think with tires strategy already a thing, if you then bring refueling rates, it can be a little bit complicated. I think tires is one variable, and I think keep it at that.
Just real quick, I would like to share the take that I had from last week, the episode that never was. So I think that Monaco should return to the calendar on a biannual basis as a non-championship race.
No.
I think that it should not count hold your questions till the end. Hold your questions till the end. All of the teams should get to bring whatever they want out there. Doesn't have to be a regulation car because it's not for championship points. It should just be an exhibition event that happens every other year, and they just bring out whatever the hell they can that's capable of actually driving on that track. I think that would make it far more exciting, and then I would actually give a shit.
Who the hell's going to watch? Well, let's replace Monaco with a Mario Kart tournament. You can't have a Formula One event that's not a world championship event.
I would like to see like
biannual,
gloves are off, show up with whatever you want.
I would say, let's do this biannual, but you can bring a car from the last 20 years of your team's history.
As long as it's up to,
how rad would that
be? If it's up to safety spec, you can bring whatever you want. So if you want to bring like a scaled down tiny car, no rules on fuel or engine size or anything, you can do whatever you want. Whatever you think is going to make you win at Monaco.
And then we get to bring back refueling, baby. Win-win. Engineer a way to take all the electronics out of it. Okay. What is this? Tron? I don't tune into Formula One to watch software engineers. Okay. I tune in to watch engines. Going against other engines. I want to see engines.
It's not my fault, man. Don't be so angry. You're pretty cheap.
I'm just watching these land yachts every weekend, dude. I'm just like, why are they so big? And then you go back and you watch 2008, man. You watch 2006. You watch you watch 2012. Well, those are kind of long cars too, but they were introducing other systems into the cars. But you watch these cars, man. You watch the Alpine from 2005, the Renault, excuse me, from 2005, the world championship. Just all these cars, man, those naturally aspirated engines. And you're just like, there's a magic about this that I wish we saw again. But I will say that if you go to those races going last year to the 2021 United States Grand Prix, it was still pretty magical. People need to go back to in-person races more, man. Aaron's going to do that this weekend in Montreal. That's going to be fun. It's going to be super fun.
Looking forward to it. I'm also going to appreciate the fact that I am taller than the average person, so I will be able to see over the top of their heads.
Stand on Elise's shoulders.
That's what I'll do.
Make her carry you on her shoulders.
Yes.
But you do have to do the husband thing where you let her sit on the shoulder. Is that still a thing? You got to do it. Man. You got to let her.
Let's have her wear a shirt that says "Sorry" on the back.
Sorry. All right, guys. We are going to take off. And if you've got any questions, comments, concerns, suggestions, you want to hack into our email address, armchairapex@gmail.com. We need to do some emails, man. We need some emails. Write us in. Guys, you have anything to add before we head out?
I just want to say rest in peace, Mohammed bin Salim's Salyums reign as the president of the FIA. The dude his foot in his mouth, and I don't think that that is going to stand.
I think it'd be fine.
The sport of F1, if you're immoral, you get cast out in the within 1 second, don't you? You know, ask famed and respected FIA member Flavio Briatore, who's always been on the right side of history. Thank you, F1.
This is a good discussion for that next time. Hey, next week on the Armchair Apex podcast, actually, because I got to read about it because I want to see. I read it briefly, so we'll see what's going on. But until next week, everyone, take it easy.